Chapter 3. When I woke up, I was groggy. In the background, I could hear horrid noises from up on deck. I was feeling better and wanted to have some breakfast. I went up the ladder in search of Montgomery to find out what was going on. On deck, I suddenly remembered that Montgomery, along with his cargo, would be getting off the boat today. Throw them overboard. Throw them overboard. This was the booming voice of Captain Davies. I saw that we weren't far from the island. It was close enough to swim if you were a strong swimmer. There was a rush of activity as the crew ran back and forth. They carried boxes of animals, passing them along the deck to where they were being unloaded into a smaller boat. The captain turned and looked at me. "Oh, hello, Mr. Mr. Prendick," I answered. "Mr. Prendick? No? Mr. Shut Up, that's you. Mr. Shut Up." I rolled my eyes. There was no point in talking to the man, so I turned to walk away. However, he grabbed my shoulder. "No, no. This way, Mr. Shut Up," he pointed towards the gangway where the animals were being unloaded. "This way." Montgomery and Emling stood and watched the animals being unloaded. They turned to look at the captain and me as we approached. "What do you mean?" I asked the captain. "Overboard with you, Mr. Shut Up," the captain laughed. "We're cleaning up. No more blasted animals. No more, Mr. Shut Up. Off you go." As he spoke, another man came up the gangway and listened to our argument. He was an older man with brown hair. He heard what the captain said, looked me up and down, and then shook his head. "Can't have you," he said in a very direct way. "I, what?" I asked, completely confused. A minute ago, all I was searching for was a bit of breakfast. Where would I go if I could not stay on the boat and go onto the island? "Look here," I said to the captain, but he stopped me. "Get off the boat," he shouted. "I'm done with the lot of you. Go off with your friends." I was about to say that I didn't even know this brown-haired man, and that I could hardly call Montgomery my friend yet, but the captain was angrily walking across the deck. "Montgomery, what do I do?" I asked desperately. He just shook his head. After that, I became quite crazy. I ran everywhere, asking for help, but no one would help. Montgomery ignored me. The brown-haired man just said, "Can't have you." The captain repeated, "Get off the boat." I watched in terror as each animal was taken from the deck and lowered into the boat until the last had been loaded. What would I do? If neither boat would have me, would they push me into the waters to drown before their eyes? It was so cruel. I was sure no good man could agree to such a plan, but I already knew that these were not normal men. The deck was cleared. It was only then that I noticed the strange brown-faced men taking the animals onto Montgomery's boat. Like Emling, they were dark-skinned and oddly misshapen. These men wore bandages that covered their true appearance. Through the bandages, I could see that they were oddly formed, with unusually shaped faces. All of them were peculiar in some way. I didn't have time to think about it. I gasped in terror as some sailors came and lifted me away. I shrieked and cried out as they dragged me towards the gangplank. I was afraid that I would be thrown into the water. But as we reached the edge, I spotted Lady Vane. It was the small dinghy which had been my prison until I was found by the boat Ipecacuanha and saved by Montgomery. They threw me into the dinghy, which almost went underwater. It was already half filled with water. The dinghy was cut loose from the ship, and I drifted away. There were no oars in the boat, no food or drink. I had nothing which I could use to help myself survive. I floated away on the tide. The brown-faced men watched me with interest, but the brown-haired man ignored me. Montgomery and Emling looked at me but said nothing. I floated away and prepared to die. I was still weak from my troubles and knew I would not last long. Tears ran down my face. Anger replaced sadness, and I beat the water and the boat with my pale, skinny hands. I prayed that God would let me die. I was knocked about on the waves and unable to help myself. The two boats grew smaller. The Ipecacuanha had turned and was going out to sea. I could see Captain Davies on deck. He was mocking me, mocking the animals and Montgomery. In the other direction, the small boat, heavily laden with animals, was heading towards the island. I looked down in despair at my feet. Water was halfway up my shins, and my feet tingled from the cold. When I glanced up again, the little boat had turned around. It appeared that the three brown-faced men who had been unloading the animals were asking Montgomery to come and fetch me. I felt incredibly relieved. When they reached me, I felt calmer and stopped crying. Thank you, I cried out as they sailed close to me. I tried to get into their boat, but there wasn't space. Montgomery's brown-haired companion was squashed up between the puma's cage and another animal's cage. Emling was practically sitting in the lap of one of the brown-faced men in bandages. Montgomery threw me a rope. I'm swamped. I'm nearly under, I stammered, the water. Montgomery gestured to Emling, who passed me a small wooden bucket which I used to bail out the seawater. Montgomery was steering and turned the boat again to head to the island. We made slow progress, heavily laden with so many men and wild animals. As we moved towards the island, the furious beating in my heart finally calmed. The brown-faced men watched me constantly. By the time we reached land, I felt weak and shaky from the scary experience that nearly killed me. Another brown-faced man was walking back and forth on the sand, and he looked at me with interest. I jumped out of the lady vane, swearing that I would never step foot in that boat again. I swore that I'd rather die than sit again in that old and dirty boat that had almost killed me multiple times. I used all my strength to pull the boat onto the shore. Montgomery and the brown-haired man were directing the others to take the animals up the beach. The brown-faced men were all extremely tall. It was clear that they were strong from the loads they each carried. The islanders began to transport the cargo and creatures up the hill. I stood for a while, and I wasn't sure what to do. I wasn't welcome, and yet they had decided, in the end, to take me to the island. Just like on the boat, I was unable to pay my way, so I decided to make myself useful. It was clear that these brown-faced men were in some way the subjects or employees of Montgomery and the old man, so I guessed that I would also work for them. I stumbled weakly across the sand and went towards the crates. I picked up a small one, aiming to take it up the beach. "Not those," Montgomery said, taking the cage of rabbits from my hands. "Just leave it." "But what do I?" I began to speak, but then I couldn't find the words. I felt dizzy and moved from side to side a little in the heat of the morning Sunday. From out of nowhere, the brown-haired man was standing next to me. "You look as if you have not eaten breakfast this morning," he said, looking me up and down. "Well, now you are our guest. We'll make sure you're comfortable, even though you weren't invited." His voice was neither harsh nor friendly, but filled with interest as he looked me over. "Montgomery tells me that you are an educated man, Mr. Prendick. Mr. Prendick. He says you know something of science?" Montgomery and I had talked on this topic only the night before when he had shared his memories of his time as a medical student. I told the man that I had been a student at the Royal College of Science, studying biology. "Well, that changes things a little, Mr. Prendick," he said, with a little more respect in his voice than before. "You see, this is a kind of biological station. Montgomery and I are men of biology. Well, I don't know when you'll get away. Ships go by once a year or so." Then he suddenly left me and walked up the beach. Most of the crates had already been carried off by the islanders, so I gave up trying to be helpful and sat in the sand. Montgomery came over to me. He had ignored me all day, and I wouldn't have said he was pleased to have me there on the island. After all, he didn't stick up for me when Captain Davies said, "Get off the boat." But now, he approached, extending his hand with a smile. "I'm glad for my part. The captain is an idiot. He was making trouble for you. You saved me again, I said. I saved you from that, perhaps, he said, nodding towards the water. But you're not out of danger for this island, he seemed to want to say something, to warn me but stopped himself. Just watch yourself here. You'll learn. I wish you'd help me with these rabbits. Together, we went over to the small crates. I expected him to ask for help carrying them up the beach in the same direction as all the other animals, but he didn't. He swung the door open, tipping the hutch so the rabbits all fell out. He gently pushed them with his foot, urging them to go into the forest. Away, my friends, increase, multiply, he looked at me then. These rabbits are our only source of meat on the island, Mr. Prendick. I didn't question it and opened another hutch. I set free a number of rabbits who quickly scattered into the wild. Then, the brown-haired man approached and gave me a flask of brandy and some biscuits. Here you are, Prendick, he said. I quickly ate the biscuits to fill my empty stomach but didn't touch the brandy. I had never drunk alcohol in my life. After seeing the state of drunk Captain Davies, I knew I never wanted to.